Okay, so in anticipation of considering the impact of Mahadran and the concept of Nereskanika, we thought we'd get a little bit of exposure to the general concept of Hidur Mitzvah B'Challah Torah Kula. And the Gemara in Masech HaShabbos and Daf Kuf Lamed Gimel Amud Beis darshans the pasuk that we're all familiar with, the pasuk from Parshas B'Shalach, that we recite as part of Az Yashir. And it's a difficult pasuk to translate. That's the problem. But the pasuk says, "Zeh keli v'andehu," this is my God. And then what? So Herman Wouk wrote a book called "This Is My God." He left out the hard part. How do you translate the word v'andehu? What does that word mean? So the Gemara has a couple of interpretations of what it could mean. One of them is that this is one of the sources, a very important concept, of v'halachta b'drachav, of following God's midos. I mean, the Torah says explicitly v'halachta b'drachav. But one of the notions that the Gemara has that we should try to be like God in terms of our personality traits, our characteristics, the Gemara says maybe that's what the word means, v'anvehu, ani, v'hu. Read it like that. And the Gemara also suggests that the v'anvehu should be interpreted as focusing on the word no'eh, Nave, meaning beautiful. And in other words, the Torah is saying, this is my God and I will beautify him. So of course, that's also a difficult concept to understand. How do you beautify God? So says the Gemara, you do mitzvos in a beautiful way. The exact language of the Gemara here is that esnoi lefanav the mitzvos, ase lefanav sukkana, velulavna, veshofarna, tzitzisna, sefer torahna, Iksobo lishmo b'diyana b'komusna b'lavvar umen b'charcha b'shira innai. That one should use beautiful objects basically for a mitzvah. One should have a beautiful sukkah, a beautiful tzitzis, beautiful lulav, beautiful sefer Torah, etc., etc. All of that should be invoked in the performance of mitzvahs. That's what the Gemara is telling us in terms of how we would, so to speak, beautify God. So it sounds like this is a din minat Torah. It sounds like this is a drasha of a pasuk, and that's a din minat Torah. The truth is, however, if you got a chance to see a little bit in the Mar Makomos at the beginning, so you probably noticed that this is really a machlokas rishonim, whether or not this is really a din minat Torah, and a lot of rishonim understood that this is a din midrabanan. So you see a language in a number of rishonim, for example, Tosfos and Maseches Menachos on Daf Mem Beis has a little bit of a funny language. It says, oh, maybe the din talking about over there is the din drabanan of the keli v'anveyu. So, of course, that sounds a little funny because the keli v'anveyu is a pasuk in Chumash. And you're calling your din drabanan, so what they must mean is that that's an asmachta. It's not the real interpretation of the pasuk. So how we, in usage, refer to ze keli v'anveyu, even though that's a pasuk, but the din that is associated with it, perhaps that's a din drabanan. And other Rishonim said differently. Other Rishonim took it more literally and assumed it was a din min ha-Torah. Now, there is a discussion in Tshuvas Dvar Yehoshua, and others raise the question that if you're going to say it's an asmachta, if you're going to say it's a din derabbanan, so then what's the din min ha-Torah? It's got to mean something. The pasuk's got to mean something on some level. So here's a little bit of a discussion about that. Chasam Sofer, in one of his places in his Kedushin, he suggests that Zeh Keli V'Yadveyu, that beautify God directly, if you're writing a Sefer Torah and you have Shem Hashem, that has to be beautiful, that's a Din Minat Torah. And maybe Hidra Mitzvah by everything else, maybe that's an extension Midrabam. Could be. But in any event, this is a Machlokas HaRishonim. And it's interesting to note, I'd like to discuss in a few minutes a little bit more detail about this, two of the approaches that are brought to prove that this is a din mi derabbanan. On the one hand, there is the Ritva in his commentary to Maseches Sukkah and Daf Yud Aleph. If you had a chance to see it, it was on the Mar Makomos. The Ritva has a comment over there where he's talking about the concept of lulav tzarech eged, the idea that the lulav, should it be tied together in a bundle, or does it not have to be tied together in a bundle? And that's also an expression of hiddur. It's a way to make everything nice. So in that context, the Ritva seems to say, if that's the way to read it, the Ritva seems to say that Hidur Mitzvah has to be Drabanan. Why? Because he's assuming a premise that a number of Rishonim assumed, that the whole notion of distinguishing between lechachilas and bidiabeds, that's really a concept that only applies to drabanans. The idea that a mitzvah has an ideal fashion and an after-the-fact fashion, that only makes sense if the mitzvah is drabanan. But as far as the Torah is concerned, everything's got to be all or nothing. Some Rishonim had this principle. Not all Rishonim had this principle, but some Rishonim did. I think I put on the Mar Makomos, I tried to move it to the bottom, but it's only tangentially relevant. It's a Tosus in Nidra, Daf Samach Vav, which I think I put a list at the bottom. It's that kind of splits the difference. It says that mitzvos minat Torah, maybe there is a concept of being lechachila b'diavad, unless the mitzvah is what we call a matir. If it's a mitzvah that changes a status from prohibited to permitted, so then it's kind of got to be absolute. It either works or it doesn't. So let's say, for example, a get. A get either works or it doesn't. Or a tefillah in the mikvah that either is mitahir or it isn't mitahir. So then you can't really talk about lechatchilas and b'diavad. Maybe mitzvos in the Torah, maybe it does make sense to talk about this. But some of the Rishonim, like the Ritva here, says that dinim and HaTorah are all or nothing. And the whole notion of something being lechatchila, being ideal, that's got to be a notion midrabanan. So therefore, Hidr Mitzvah has got to be Drabbanim.
Don't you have a similar concept about Mitzvah Nikiyam? It's also with the Torah's description of how you should approach Mitzvah, or just doing things in a way which avoids suspicion. So it's kind of also this amorphous.
The fact that it's a little vague is not necessarily reflective of this issue per se, although I think I know what you're getting at, but maybe we'll get to that a little bit later. But here it's not so much about it being amorphous, but it's about the fact that Hidr Mitzvah by its very nature is not makif. You can fulfill a mitzvah without it. So the idea that you could have a din min haTorah, but you don't have to do it, and the mitzvah is still good without it, some of the Rishonim, like this Ritva, thought that wasn't a concept that exists on the level of min haTorah. That's one point, and we'll come back to that point in a second after raising a few other issues. Another kind of battleground point is there is the Gemara in Bava Kamma on Daf Tes, which I put on the Makaros, that the Gemara there says, has a discussion of how much you should add for a Hidr Mitzvah. And the assumption is that if you're willing to go a certain length for the Mitzvah, so you should be willing to go a little farther for a Hidr Mitzvah. So how much should you add on? What's considered to be reasonable to add on for a Hidr Mitzvah? So the Gemara says that Hidr Mitzvah ad Shlish. Now, we'll interpret that the way some Rishonim do. We'll mention the Machlokas about this in a few minutes. But let's assume what that means is that it's talking about how much money you spend on the Mitzvah. So let's say you have an Esrog. And an Esrog costs, a kosher Esrog, let's say it costs $30. And you have a fancier esrog. The fancier esrog costs $1,000. So that's disproportionate to spend so much more, to spend more than 30 times more in order to get a fancy esrog. That's beyond what's really expected. That's way disproportionate. So what's considered to be reasonable? So says the Gemara, you should add on a shlish. You should add on a third. And the question is, what does the third mean? So you'll say, I know what a third means. It's 33%. I took math. 33 1/3%. So it's not so clear that's what it means. The Gemara actually has two candidates. That it either means shlish milagav or shlish milavar, a third from the inside or a third from the outside. In other words, it could mean 1/3 or it could mean a half. Why would it mean a half? Why would a third mean a half? Because if you add on a third, if you add on a half, it's a third of the new total. So if you add on 50%, it's 30%, 33% of the new total. So let's say if we're talking about a base price of $30, so adding on a third could either mean adding on $10, you'll pay $40 for the fancy esrog, or it could mean adding on $15. It's half of the base price, but once you add it, it's a third of the new total. The new total will be $45, you added on 15, that's a third of the new total. So the Gemara says, which is it? Does it mean you should add 50% or you should add 33%? So the Gemara doesn't answer the question. It's left open. It's left as a teku in the Gemara. So how do we pass it? So that's a machlokas, how we pass it, of course. So many paskin lakula, that you only add on 33%. Others paskin we should open more windows because it's very hot in here. Is that possible? And the third view is that we should add 50%. So the more prevalent view that we add a third, many understand that to mean that it's a din midrabanan. Because apparently it's an unresolved issue in the Gemara. And therefore, if it's a suffix, so if we're going lakula, it sounds like it's a suffix derabanan. Now that's not a slam dunk interpretation. There could be other reasons why we might go lakula on this. And in this discussion, the Maharshal has a comment in Maseches Bava Kamma, where he says, even if it's daraisa, but it's not a whole mitzvah, it's an aspect of the mitzvah, there's what to be mefalpel about that, about whether or not this really means that conclusion. But in any event, there are many who assume that that's what the relevant issue is here, that if this is a din midrabanan, so you would resolve this unresolved question lakula, and if it's a din daraisa, you'd resolve the lachumra, and that's how you could address the different positions on this issue. And many assume that that's the case, is it din derabanan because of this lenient stance, and others read it differently. So, working with those basic elements, I think you could posit the following question. And perhaps this is a good way to look at this whole issue. And again, please try to keep all these details in mind. Everything that we've said so far, and everything that we'll say in the next few minutes, will be very useful background to compare when we focus on Chanukah next week. So really try to keep some of these details that we've mentioned and are coming up in the next few minutes in mind for that discussion. You can pose the following question. Why is it that the Torah, Chazal, whatever it is, why is it that the Halacha wants us to engage in Hiddur Mitzvah? And you could say it comes from at least two different approaches. On the one hand, you could say that this is an expression of enthusiasm. That the Torah wants us to show that we're not just happy with being Yotzei. You know, yesterday we talked about the significance of the word Yotzei in from another direction. How maybe even if you're not Yotzei, you don't focus. It's a very valuable exercise to focus on what that word really means. We throw it about in conversation all the time. You're Yotzei Mitzvah, you're not Yotzei. What does the word mean? So yesterday we emphasized that maybe you're not Yotzei, you haven't left your obligation. Let's say if you use insufficient amount of oil, we talked about yesterday. So maybe you're not Yotzei, but maybe you're still doing something. You're still being involved in a mitzvah. So here, what about the other direction? Maybe you could be Yotzei, you could be out of your obligation, but maybe there's better job you could have done. Maybe you could have expressed more enthusiasm and more recognition of the value of the mitzvah. So maybe Hiddur Mitzvah is such an idea that you could be Yotzei without it, but the Torah wants you to show that mitzvos are valuable to you. We have a few other principles that seem to reflect that idea as well. Like what? The Lifnim Meshurat HaDin is actually a Benodim L'Chaveiru principle, which involves other ideas.
But also the similar idea, just even though the requirement is such, we encourage you to do
something. So to do a mitzvah in a more perfect way. But I was also thinking of principles such as, let's say, Zrizin, Makdim, and L'Mitzvos, which each one is a whole sugi. Each one may be about this, may be about something else, but possibly a part of this group. Zrizin, Makdim, and L'Mitzvos, we want to do mitzvos at the earliest opportunity, even if we could be Yotzei doing them later, we still try to do it earlier. Or another example that's probably mitzvah, Bo, Yoser, Mibishlucho, that even though, again, you could be Yotzei at mitzvah, having a shliach do it for you, still, the halacha encourages you to do it yourself. We have certain aspects, certain concepts like this where the mitzvah could be fulfilled one way, but we advocate that you show your enthusiasm and your personal commitment by doing more. So Hiddur Mitzvah might be such a concept. Alternatively, it could be something else. It could be that there is a principle that all the major world religions seem to have agreed upon, that it is a Kiddush Hashem, that it does something for the reputation of the religion of God if the items, the physical items that are associated with the religion are attractive, are impressive. So in every major world religion, the house of worship is often an object of much spending and much elaborate investment. Now, the halacha, this is not really so observed nowadays, but the halacha does require that a shul be the highest building in town. There is a notion that that which physically represents God and his mitzvos should be the most aesthetically pleasing and the most physically impressive items, and perhaps that's what's going on here also, which maybe is a little bit of a closer read of the Gemara we just saw. Hisnoa lefano b'mitzvos, beautify God. How do you beautify God? Through the mitzvos that you do. What we have as a stand-in for God, we can look at the fulfillment of his mitzvos. They should be beautiful. They should be attractive. Right?
But don't we know that hinder is not necessarily based on the way things look, but it's like technical specifications?
So that's a good question. We'll see if that's true or not. You know, I think that's going to be part of the issue. Is that really the case? I'm not sure which examples you think. In a few minutes, if we haven't... But that may not, that may be relevant. We'll talk about that after, in the next few minutes, if we haven't addressed that question, ask it again. Yosef?
With all of this, though, why would this be a reason why suddenly hiddur should enable, say, Mila, when you're talking about starting Shabbos, should be Dofa Shabbos or something like that?
So hiddur seems to not be Dofa Shabbos, as we'll discuss, but what exactly the relationship is, I'll explain the context, and we'll see if that question is relevant in a few minutes. So I think that issue, this question of what is hiddur really about, is it an expression of our commitment, or is it a separate idea that anytime you have a visible item, the item should be nice, should be attractive? I think that could be behind a number of issues. And first of all, just to go back to the Ritva for a second, let's assume that we accept the Ritva's premise that a mitzvah daraisa, all the rules, daraisa of the mitzvah, have to be ma'akev, have to be do or die. So you could say that, yes, that's true, if it's a rule of the mitzvah. But maybe hiddur mitzvah is not about the individual mitzvahs that we're dealing with. Maybe hiddur mitzvah is just a general principle how we relate to mitzvahs. So we should relate to mitzvahs with enthusiasm and all these different concepts about we do them quickly, we do them ourselves, we do them in the nicest possible way. That's all about us. That's not a detail in any individual mitzvah. So maybe the premise is true that all the details of a mitzvah that are minat Torah have to be ma'akev. But hiddur mitzvah is not about any individual mitzvah. It's about us. Parenthetically, I should just mention at this point, I don't know if we'll have time to focus on this too much, we should be aware that it's possible that lulav and esrog have a different halacha. And I called your attention to Rashi and Tosfos over there, and daf chaf tes and aleph in the sukkah, that when it comes to esrog, the Torah specifically uses the word hadar, pre-eitz hadar. So what exactly is the difference between esrog and everything else vis-a-vis hiddur mitzvah? It may be there's a little bit of a different lumdus there, and we may or may not have time to address that, but just be aware in the back of your mind that might be a little bit different. But one could say that in general, hiddur mitzvah is not a detail in any specific mitzvah, at least not in terms of, it's not esrog. It's a general attitude. So therefore, maybe the premise is true, but you don't necessarily have to have the Ritva's conclusion. Unless maybe the Ritva is saying that he thinks hiddur mitzvah is a din in the mitzvah itself, and the fact that it's not ma'akev means that it's derabbanan. But one could take a different approach and say, no, maybe it's daraisa, but it's not ma'akev because it's not a part of the mitzvah, it's a part of how we relate to mitzvah. Hi.
I know you can sort of get like an infinite loop into this, but is there any suggestion that if you have, let's say, a separate union of hiddur on a mitzvah, that hiddur is to add a third of your money you're going to spend on that? Can you say you want to add a hiddur on your hiddur mitzvah and then a constant third?
Yeah, that would be an infinite loop, and that would be a little bit... self-defeating in terms of the principle. But it's interesting. So now let's come back to that point exactly about what that specific din is about. Because that's another reflection, I think, of this issue. So the Gemara about adding on a shlish, about adding on a third. So what I said before was only Rashi's interpretation about spending money, spending more than adding on a third of the expense. And I use the example of esrog. Rashi actually talks about Sefer Torah, which is an interesting case. But Tosfos disagrees with Rashi, if you had a chance to see it. And Tosfos talks about esrog. And it actually works better for his position because it's not going to necessarily work for every mitzvah in the Torah. But Tosfos says that it's not about money, but it's about, let's say, size. That's why esrog is a better example. Not every mitzvah we focus so much on size, but esrog size is a concept. So says Tosfos, let's say you have a esrog that's the size of an ego, the size of a nut. So it's kosher, but it's not very impressive. And you have the ability to get a bigger esrog. So you have to get an esrog that's 10 times the size. Also, you'll go for the esrog that's a third bigger. So this machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos, whether it's about money or about the size of the object, could be the same issue that we're talking about. Is it that we're focused on how much you put into it? So money is an indication of your self-sacrifice towards the mitzvah. You sacrifice a certain amount in order to fulfill the mitzvah, you should sacrifice even more in order to do it better. Or should we say, no, it doesn't matter, no one's going to know how much you spent unless you make a point to tell them. But it's about the impact, and that a attractive esrog would be even better if it's X amount more attractive. And again, esrog is at least lends itself to quantification in those terms in general. Beauty is not something you can really measure in terms of this, so that's why esrog happens to be a uniquely shayach example for this. But that seems to be the issue, that perhaps Rashi is talking about what it takes out of you, and Tosfos is talking about the impact that it has on others. This is relevant to a couple of issues. There is also, for example, a machlokas, that if you got a chance to see Tosfos and Maseches Menachos and Daf Lamed Beis, they put a Ramah on the Marmal Komus as well. So we have a halacha, for example, you write a Sefer Torah. So the Sefer Torah is supposed to have underlines. It's supposed to have what we call sirtut. You're supposed to scratch underlines into the parchment. And that's really an application of hiddur, because you're going to have neater ksav if the writing is has a line for it. So do you have such a halacha by tefillin? Do the parshias of tefillin have to have underlines? Sirtut? So that's the machlokas harishonim. And it seems to be that it's relevant to this issue. I think that that's related a little bit to what Ephraim was saying beforehand, and tell me if this is what you were getting at. That the question is, what exactly is the purpose of hiddur? Is hiddur about you're going the extra mile? So therefore, you should go to the extra mile, even if it's an issue like tefillin. What's the difference between tefillin and Sefer Torah for this purpose? You never see it, right? The only person who ever sees the parshiyos of tefillin is the sofer who writes it and the sofer who checks it. But the rest of the time, the tefillin are wrapped up inside the box. And if we're talking about tefillin shel yad, the box itself is covered up, which is also a concept that Shuvas discuss, whether there's a difference between tefillin shel rosh and tefillin shel yad in terms of the externalities, in terms of the batin. The tefillin shel yad are generally covered, tefillin shel rosh are generally exposed. So should we say that hiddur mitzvah is only relevant if the mitzvah item is visible? So that's the machlokas harishonim on this point. And it seems to flow from this issue also. Because if it's about your commitment, so then you go the extra mile, that's an issue between you and God. It doesn't make a difference that nobody else knows. But if it's an issue about impressing people, if that's the idea, that hiddur mitzvah reflects the fact that we always try to impress people with the mitzvahs, so then if it's visible, okay, it's worthwhile. But if no one's ever going to see it, so then perhaps it's not the best use of our resources to invest in a hiddur that's not going to be perceived by anyone. This is something very relevant to the Chanukah discussion, so keep this principle in mind for next week. That could reflect this issue as well. Another major battleground is the Gemara also here on Daf Kuf Lamed Gimel and Shabbos. If you had a chance to see the Gemara earlier on the Daf that gets into the discussion of Hiddur Mitzvah. So the Gemara talks about the concept of Bris Milah. Without getting too graphic, when you do a Bris Milah, so there's a way to cut enough that you are Yotzei, the mitzvah is fulfilled. And there's a way to cut more that's considered to be a hiddur. It's what the Gemara calls sitzin hama'akfin asamila, the part of the skin that if you don't cut it, the mila is no good, it's ma'akev. And then there's more of it sits in she'ena ma'akvin as a mila, the part that's not ma'akev, the mila is good without it, but it's a hider mitzvah to go further. So the Gemara has it then, again if you saw it, here on the top of Kufam Gimel Beis, right, the Gemara says that hamal, when you're involved in a bris mila, calls manshu osek b'mila, if you're still involved in cutting the skin, chozer beinol that sits in a ma'akvin as a mila, but sits in she'ena ma'akvin as a mila. So then, if you haven't done it perfectly, if you hadn't got all the parts, even the parts that are not ma'akev, you make sure to do it perfectly with the hidden. Piresh, but if you've taken your hand away already, ready, finished the bris mila. Al tzitzin ma'akvin as a mila chozer. The part that's ma'akev, but the bris is no good if you didn't do it, so then you have to go back and you have to finish. Al tzitzin she'en ma'akvin as a mila eino chozer. But the part that's not ma'akev, that's just a hidden mitzvah, you don't go back. You don't come back and recut that. So, what's the difference? Why is it if it's not ma'akev, so you shouldn't go back, but it's still a hidden mitzvah? We've been advocating hidden mitzvah this whole time. So why should you not continue if it's only a hidden, Yosef?
It's a Shabbos.
So it seems to be it's a consideration of Shabbos. That's how the majority of Rishonim understand this. It's the way Rashi understands it, that's the way the Ramban, the Tur. Many of the Rishonim take that approach. It's a Gemara that appears in the Masechta Shabbos, that's the issue. That it's a whole chiddush that we're doing a bris mila on Shabbos to begin with. Should have been a malacha, but the Torah tells us that on the eighth day you do a bris mila even if it's on Shabbos. So fine, okay. And while you're in the process, so then that includes the mitzvah in its perfect form, right? Which again is a little bit of a parallel to what we talked about yesterday. That the mitzvah should be done in Bitzuras in its perfect way, so then, okay, even though it's Shabbos, you cut the whole section, including the hid. But if you finish the cut, so now you're going to go back in just for a hid or mitzvah, that can't justify Chil Shabbos. That can't justify being done on Shabbos. That's the way most of the Rishonim understand it. But the Ramban has this in Hilchos Mila, in Perek Beis, Halacha Daled. And in the Rambam's reading, it's not Shabbos. It's a weekday. Why do you not go back if it's not Shabbos? Why shouldn't you fulfill the Hiddur? Why shouldn't you go back in for the Hiddur mitzvah? So there is a mahalach that a lot of Achronim have. And again, please try to remember this for next week because there's a famous Brisker Rav about in Hilchos Chanukah that we'll discuss in that context. So try to hold on to this point for then. But without bringing in Chanukah now, so a lot of Achronim have the idea or have the essence of the idea that the Brisker Rav discusses. You can find aspects of this in the Shagas Aryeh, in the Beis Halevi, and a number of other Achronim. That the issue is as follows. That perhaps the Machlokes is that according to most of the Rishonim, it's apparently possible to do the Hidr Mitzvah after the Mitzvah is already finished. And the Rambam holds differently. The Rambam holds that a Hidr Mitzvah has to be a part of the Mitzvah itself. And if you have finished the Mitzvah, you can't go back and do the Hidr. That's the gist of it. Now we have to sharpen it a little bit. And again, this will be a big part of the Chanukah discussion. We have to sharpen it a little bit because it's hard to believe that anyone says that you can really have a hiddur completely disembodied from the mitzvah. Presumably everyone agrees that a hiddur needs to have some kind of connection to the mitzvah itself. Just to give you an example, there is a story they say about Reb Chaim. It's kind of a brain teaser. As a story is told about Reb Chaim, it happens to be it's in the Tshuvas Beis Halevi. The father of Reb Chaim is Tshuvas. Talks about this, but for some reason there's a story that's told about Reb Chaim, and in the literature it's in the Beis Halevi. It's in the Chelek Beis and in Mem Zayin and Tshuvas, where he asks the following question. Let's say you have two esrogim you can take. One esrog is definitely kosher, but you're not sure if it's mahudr. You're not sure if it meets the standard of being a beautiful esrog. The other esrog is gorgeous. But you have some suffix about its kashrus. You have some suffix about its history. You're not sure if it's a kosher esrog. So let's assume it's not a question of buying one or the other. You have them both accessible. You'll make a bracha, and you'll pick up one and then pick up the other. Which should you pick up first? What would you say? Which should you pick up first? Anyone want to take a stab at it? So the intuitive approach is to say, take the kosher one first. Right? Kashrus is definitely more important than hiddur. Without kashrus, you have nothing here. So pick up the kosher one first, that's more important. But Reb Chaim, allegedly in the Beis Halevi in print, said the other way. Why? Can anyone figure out why he'd say the other way? Because if you pick up the one that's definitely kosher first, so then you're yotzei the mitzvah. So if it turns out it's mahoder, terrific. But if not, you're done. So now to pick up the other one is not going to add anything, because you can't say, okay, here's my kosher esrog, yay, now I'm picking up my beautiful esrog. You can't have the concepts separate from each other. So if you do it the other way around, if you pick up the possibly kosher, definitely mahoder one, so if it's kosher, great. So then you'll get that's kosher and mahoder. And then if it's not, you'll pick up the other one, at least you'll be out to the mitzvah with a kosher one. So that was the way he assumed. Now you may parenthetically say, well, is this a hefsek to pick up another esrog, make a bracha, and then maybe you're picking up an invalid esrog before the kosher esrog? So presumably not, although there were those who raised the issue. Just parenthetically, other poskim thought it was a hefsek. There's a truth about it in the Avi Nezer, and the Sefer Nefesh Chaya. There's a discussion in some sort about whether or not this is 100% agreed upon. But the basic point of the story is that it doesn't make sense to have a hiddur disembodied from the mitzvah. It's okay, I was yotzei esrog a half hour ago, now I'm going to be yotzei the hiddur of esrog. You know, clearly the mitzvah's got to be done together. You can't say I have my two esrogim, one's kosher and one's mahudur. Yes, Ephraim?
When explaining the opposite opinion of the Ritva, can we say that maybe hiddur is separate from it?
We say that it refers to different things. That refers to your enthusiasm towards doing the mitzvah. But if you're not doing the mitzvah now, you're just doing a hiddur without the mitzvah.
No, we said there's a general principle of hiddur of how we relate to mitzvahs.
Right, but when we're doing the mitzvah itself, not when we're doing something separate from
it. It's part of the mitzvah, or it is?
Well, if we're doing two separate things, right? Let's say we really had one kosher esrog and one non-kosher esrog that was beautiful. So to say, okay, I'll do my mitzvah and I'll do my hiddur separately. It doesn't seem so feasible. So it's hard to imagine the other Rishonim really disagree with the Rambam about that. That's a pretty compelling principle. So presumably you have to sharpen it a little bit. And again, this will come up in the Chanukah discussion. But presumably what they mean is that you clearly have to have some connection to the mitzvah in order for Hiddur to be invoked. But perhaps the other Rishonim hold that a kiyum of the mitzvah is in fulfillment, even if there's no action anymore, that's enough. So a lot of Rishonim and Achronim have the principle that when it comes to Bris Milah, there's an ongoing mitzvah your whole life. Right, we talked about this a little bit with Kaf Sazakah. We talked about the prohibition to try to undo your Milah. And the Rishonim understand that, it's based on a Marach or Zeruah, the Rishonim understand that Bris Milah, to be circumcised, is an ongoing mitzvah. There's a Gemara in the office. The Gemara says that David HaMelech was sitting in the bathhouse without any clothes on, and he felt bad, he felt depressed, because he didn't have any mitzvahs. And then he remembered, oh, he has the Bris Milah. So that's very impressive thinking for an 8-day-old baby. He was thinking about that during his bris, so presumably no. Presumably he was a grown-up at that time. And his point was that he has the mitzvah of Milah, not because there was a Maisa Milah going on, but to be circumcised is also a kiyum ha-mitzvah, it's also an ongoing mitzvah. So the Rishon who say you can come and add on a hiddur afterwards, presumably they agree that you have to have something about the mitzvah that's continuing. You can't have it completely disembodied. But that's enough, a passive state of fulfillment of the mitzvah, you can come back and add the mitzvah. But the Rambam's position seems to be that hiddur is about the maisa ha-mitzvah. When you do the mitzvah, there's an extra point that you should do the mitzvah behidr. And if you have finished doing the mitzvah already, so then there isn't any point in being mahadr afterwards. Meaning you finished doing it in the active sense, finished doing the maisa ha-mitzvah. So that might be at issue here. Perhaps that's what's going on. That this is the same machlokas maybe. that maybe the Rambam holds that hiddur is all about how we do things, how we relate to mitzvahs. And therefore he's saying that when we do a mitzvah, we should do that action to hiddur. After we're done, there isn't much to accomplish by going back and putting a chari on top. By adding something afterwards, that's not really what hiddur is about. Hiddur is about doing the mitzvah with this enthusiasm. While the other Rishonim may behold that hiddur is about having an impressive end result, and therefore you can come back and enhance the result afterwards, that's also called hiddur. Now it's been pointed out that the Rambam perhaps actually is consistent in this, that maybe the Rambam understands in general that hiddur mitzvah is actually all about how we do things and not really at all about the object of the mitzvah. And that hiddur mitzvah in general, if you go through Mishneh Torah, when the Rambam talks about hiddur, he talks about it in the sense of how we do actions and not so much about a chefza shal mitzvah kind of idea. And in fact, it's also been pointed out that the din of shlish, of adding on to a third, which would seem to apply specifically to how a chefza shal mitzvah is brought about, that the Rambam doesn't actually quote that din at all. And maybe that's consistent with this possibility that the Rambam really understands hiddur is about a maisa hamitzvah. It's interesting to note, just to give a few other examples, that around the Mar Makomos, that you do find some usages of the phrase hiddur mitzvah in Rishonim, when it's not talking about an object, but it's talking about how things are done. So, for example, if you got a chance to see on Daf Tzadi Tes and Aleph Musachim, it was Daf Yomi about 2 weeks ago, a little less. So the Mishnah says that one should not eat on Erev Pesach. And the Rishonim explain, why should you not eat on Erev Pesach? So Rashi and the Rashbam over there say that you should be able to eat matzah b'teyavon. You should be able to eat matzah with a greater appetite. And they say that's a hiddur mitzvah. So how is that a hiddur mitzvah? It doesn't involve any more attractive spectacle. In fact, it may involve a less attractive spectacle if you have too great of an appetite when you're eating the matzah. So that's not a classic hiddur mitzvah the way we normally understand it. So it sounds like what they're talking about is that when you do a mitzvah with greater enthusiasm because you have a bigger appetite, so that's a hiddur. The action is done with more excitement. So a different usage of hiddur. Or similarly, Tosfos and Masechta Brachos, which you also put on the list, Tosfos and Brachos and Daf Chaf Aleph, has a position, I don't know if this is really normative halacha, although maybe on some degree it is, we have a concept of Shomei Ka'oneh, and we say that, I think we talked about this last year a little bit, right? That we have a notion that when you have a mitzvah of speech, so you don't necessarily have to say the phrase, say the bracha, read the Megillah, whatever it is, do it yourself, but you can hear it from someone else. So we assume halacha l'maisa that that's not a b'di'eved, that that's an equally valid way of doing the mitzvah. We don't assume that 99% of all people who hear Megillah on Purim rather than read the Megillah itself, we don't assume they're doing the mitzvah b'di'eved. We assume that's the chachila. But Tosfos does have a statement over there in Brachos that there's a hiddur mitzvah to say a bracha yourself. So again, that's about a hiddur in the action. It's not about any visible hiddur that there's a nicer item, but it's about a hiddur in how you do something, and perhaps that's consistent with this idea that seems to be there in the Rambam, that hiddur is about the way you do things rather than about some type of beautiful item. Right.
What if there's a hiddur in the opposite direction? Of
okay.
Beginning to listen and not to say it.
There is, yeah, it is an interesting question, and the focus is one aspect, but there is another component that they also invoke the concept of the Rovam Hadras Melech, that when the mitzvah is done in a greater group, in a larger group, that's a different type of hiddur. So you're right that there is another issue, and it's an interesting question which we won't spend so much time on right now, but to be aware of, that there is what to ask when we talk about hiddur mitzvah in this sense that we've been talking about, or at least in the object sense, and how it plays off against other such concepts. So for example, there's an extensive literature about versus mitzvah bo yosem or b'shlucho. So let's say, for example, many posts can have tshuvas about the question, if we assume there's a mitzvah for everyone to write a Sefer Torah. So most of us wouldn't know where to start with writing a Sefer Torah. But let's say I could fetch out a kosher Sefer Torah, that if I were to try, put my mind to it, I could write a Sefer Torah that would be kosher, but it's not going to be too impressive. And if I were to hire a professional sofer, so then we'll have a beautiful Sefer Torah. So there, it's a clash between mitzvah bo yosrim b'shlucho and the hiddur mitzvah. You'll have a nicer outcome if the professional does it. So in that issue, the post can talk about that. They almost all side in favor of hiddur mitzvah. So hiddur mitzvah is more important than mitzvah bo yosrim b'shlucho. Or there is a major machlokas when it comes to Zrizim Akin in the mitzvahs versus Hidden Mitzvah. That comes up a lot. So what should you prefer? Do a mitzvah at the earliest possible opportunity, or do a mitzvah when you can do it better? So for example, we have a practice that we usually say Kiddush Levana on a Motzoi Shabbos. So what does Kiddush Levana have to do with Motzoi Shabbos? What's the reason to do it then? There isn't really a reason to do it then, except that it's brought in the postgame that we would prefer that people be all dressed up in their finery for Kiddush Levana. So it's not so likely that people are going to get all dressed up for this 3-minute mitzvah. So we try to do it Motzoi Shabbos because everyone's still dressed up for Shabbos, so we can take advantage of that, so Kiddush Levana will be done in the most mahudra fashion. So that's not necessarily the earliest opportunity to do it. So the decision to do it on a Motzi Shabbos for this hiddur is a decision that hiddur mitzvah should take precedent over doing mitzvah at the earliest opportunity. So this is a machlokus in general, and there's a conflict between those two. Should you do the mitzvah perfectly or do the mitzvah in the earliest fashion? So that's a discussion. I think the elements of that discussion are probably more about Zrizus than it is about Hiddur Mitzvah, so we won't go into it now. We will have an opportunity someday to discuss Zrizim, but I think that's really where the key to that machlokus lies. But in any event, there is a discussion when it comes to Hiddur Mitzvah, how it plays off on these other principles. I should mention that even if you don't follow the Rambam and this Rashi and this Tosfos, there's a concept of the Hiddur and how you do things. Everyone agrees that there is an Indian to do things in a way that's more enthusiastic and also sometimes, let's say, more considerate of other opinions in halacha, more all-encompassing of all the possible ways to do it in an optimal fashion. So you might just call that something different. Rav Asher Weiss has an essay about this, and you may call that the mitzvah min hamufcha. So what we call a mitzvah min hamufcha, doing the mitzvah in a way that really covers all the bases in the most appropriate fashion, that might just be a different way to call what some of the Rishonim have called Hiddur Mitzvah. But perhaps there is this machlokas whether Hiddur Mitzvah is about how you do things or it's about how impressive it is, and that perhaps ties into this whole question we've been having about what Hiddur Mitzvah is. So in general, so there is a big discussion the Achronim have about Hiddur Mitzvah and the relevant mitzvos in which it's relevant. Do we say that Hiddur Mitzvah becomes a detail of the mitzvah itself, or do we say that it's external to the mitzvah? It's something else, which I think also, again, ties back to this basic question of what hiddur is. Is it something that's a general detail of mitzvahs and therefore becomes relevant to each specific mitzvah? Or is it about how we relate to mitzvahs and it's not really part of the mitzvah itself? So that should impact questions. So, for example, issues we'll post can talk about when you have an asei do chalos asei. So do you say that the assay status extends to the hiddur of the assay? All kinds of questions like that, whether or not the mitzvah, you say osik the mitzvah, patim in a mitzvah. Does that mean if you're osik in a hiddur mitzvah, is that also considered to be a part of the mitzvah that will patim you from other mitzvahs? In all these cases, you have the discussion in the Rishonim and the Achronim, it's probably all ties back to this question. What about the baltachkos versus hiddur mitzvah? This discussion in the Sefer Chassidim. Now, let's say you're writing a Sefer Torah. So each section of parchment is called a Yeriah. So let's say you have a Yeriah where you made a mistake and you can't fix it. So then you'll have to take the Uriah and put it away in Shemos. It's not kosher for a Sefer Torah, you'll have to put it away. What if the section is kosher, but it's not mahodir, it's not beautiful, you think you do a better job? So are you allowed to put that away in Shemos, or should we say that's Baal Tashkis? It's a big waste. So we would normally allow Baal Tashkis for the purpose of the mitzvah. Would you allow it for the purpose of the Heder mitzvah? That's also a discussion the folks can have. Probably all relates to this question of whether a Heder mitzvah is something that becomes a detail of the mitzvah itself, or is it something that talks about how we relate to mitzvahs. In any event, what seems to emerge even within that question from this Gemara and Shabbos over here is that we would assume that a Heder mitzvah by itself would not justify Chil Shabbos. It would justify doing the mitzvah initially in an ideal fashion. So when you do the bris milah on Shabbos, you'll do it with the hiddur. But to go back just for a hiddur on Shabbos, that we wouldn't justify. That a hiddur mitzvah by itself would not be of a mitzvah status in order to be docha Shabbos if it was a mitzvah that would be docha Shabbos. That's how it seems to emerge from this Gemara, and that's probably the intuitive conclusion we'd have also. However, there is a Gemara in Maseches Menachos, which put out the Mar Makomos also on Daf Samach Dalet, which does raise the question. The Gemara says that let's say you have a korban that's being shechted on Shabbos, which theoretically you could have, right? If you have a korban sibor shezmano kavua, you have a korban sibor that has to be brought at this time, so that could be docha Shabbos. So if you need to shecht an animal for that, so you could do that on Shabbos. But the Gemara says the following is true also. That let's say you have already shechted an animal. You have a korban that's ready to be brought. But you realize that the animal that was shechted is a shvachan animal. It's a skinny animal. And now you have the opportunity to shecht a bigger animal. Now you have an opportunity to go for a bigger hiddur, basically. The Gemara calls a shmeina. You shechted the kechusha, and now you have a shmeina. So the Gemara says, the Gemara talks about whether you be chayiv or patur, if you shechted an animal and you already had one. And the Gemara says, first of all, that if you shechted first the skinny animal, and then you shechted after that the fatter animal, then you would not be chayiv, it would be patur. And then the Gemara says, not only would you be potter, but we tell you to do that. That we say that if that's the case, and you shechted the shvach animal, and now you have an opportunity to go for a bigger animal, we say, bring the bigger animal and shecht it on Shabbos. So it sounds like from that hiddur mitzvah is docha Shabbos. Because here you have a situation, you're only motivated by hiddur, right? Because you have the korban ready. So the only reason to shecht now is to make the mitzvah better, is for hiddur purposes. And yet you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. You're encouraged to do that on Shabbos. It sounds like Hidra Mitzvah is Docha Shabbos. Hi.
If you weren't Makra in the first one yet, so maybe you didn't really even finish the Mitzvah at all.
But you still can. Right now you have this. You have the opportunity to be Makra of this first animal. So the Mitzvah itself is not forcing you to Shecht on Shabbos. The only thing that's compelling you to Shecht is the Hidra. So this is a major discussion. The Imre Yosher has a very creative suggestion that it says that whoever shechted this animal on behalf of the Sibor was a shliach for the Sibor. So the din is if you're mashat from the shlichus, if you deviate from your mission, so the shlichus doesn't take effect. So presumably it could be taken for granted that the Sibor wants the best animal for their korban. And this guy shechted the second best animal, so that was a deviation from the shlichus. The whole thing doesn't take effect. It's as if it wasn't accomplished. It's a creative approach. But others suggest, and I should mention Rabbi Shlomo Warman, Zechus Tzadik Livracha, who passed away a little while ago, has the suggestion in one of his svarim, that one could suggest that this really is not actually about Zekei Levi Anveim. That when it comes to Korbanos, we're dealing in a different world. And there's a Gemara Maseches Yuma, which I put on the list as well, that maybe when it comes to korbanos, you have a halacha of mimivchar nidracha, that the korban should be brought from the best possible item that you have for this purposes. So that's the standard. So perhaps maybe that's maake, maybe that could justify doing this on Shabbos. But this is not necessarily reflective of a general consideration when it comes to Zakei Levan Vayu. Doesn't necessarily tell us anything for that purpose. Okay, so those are some key background issues of Hiddur Mitzvah. So in general, I will, I'll chazer this very quickly what we spoke about, but please try to remember some of these key points, because next week we'll look at Mahadrin in the context of Hanukkah, and we have to try to figure out to what extent does it draw off the general principles that we discussed today, the general principles of Hiddur Mitzvah. And tomorrow, Parsha, just to call your attention that in Shlishi of Lech Lecha, there is a major important halachic topic, very fascinating topic, so you should be very excited to discuss that tomorrow, God willing, for Chumash. So just to quickly, we'll quickly review about what we spoke about today. So we talked about the fact that the Gemara tells us in Shabbos is a principle of Hiddur Mitzvah based on the pasuk of Zakei Levan Vayu, that we should do mitzvos in a beautiful way. And it was a machlokas rishonim, whether that's the actual interpretation of the pasuk, or is it an asmachta, is it a din d'oraisa, din d'rabbanan. The Ritva says it's got to be d'rabbanan, because otherwise it would have to be ma'akev. And the Gemara says you should add on a third to the mitzvah for the purposes of hiddur, but it's a machlokas, it's an open question in the Gemara, whether it's a 33% third or 50% third. And since many poskim hold the kula, maybe that means it's a din d'rabbanan. That's how some assume. So we posited the question that Hiddur Mitzvah could either be seen as a personal expression of enthusiasm or as a value that we should do mitzvahs that are visible in a beautiful way because it's a Kiddush Hashem, because it draws positive attention to God. And we suggested that could be behind a couple of issues. It could be behind the Ritzvah's concern, because maybe it's Daraisa, but it's not about the mitzvah, it's about you, so that's why it's not Ma'akev. We suggested that it could be behind another machlokas, Nakamara about shlish, whether adding on a shlish is about money, like Rashi, the expression of commitment, or it's about impact, like Tosfos, that the mitzvah should be more impressive. And that it could also be what's behind the machlokas, whether hiddur is relevant if the aspect will not be seen by anyone else. So, for example, whether tefillin should have hiddur in the parshios, that should be underlined. Like a Sefer Torah, is that only a halacha in the visible Sefer Torah, or does it apply even to the less visible parshios of tefillin? And then this Gemara over here about going back for a hiddur in a bris milah, the Gemara says you don't do that. Most Rishonim say you don't do it because it's Shabbos, so you can't justify being Mechal Shabbos for the extra cut. But the Rambam maintains you don't go back even during the week, and the Hesber a lot of Achronim have is that the Rambam holds you can't have a hiddur separate from the mitzvah. Now, we clarified that a little bit, that we use the Esrog example to illustrate that probably no one thinks you could really have a hiddur completely disembodied from the mitzvah, but the other Rishonim maybe believe that the passive fulfillment of the mitzvah is enough to go back and fix the hiddur. And the Rambam understands hiddur is part of a mitzvah, it's how you do things, and therefore it's only relevant when you're actually doing the mitzvah. And then we discussed how a notion of hiddur and how we do things and not just the object is something we find in other Rishonim as well. We find that in Rashi and the Rashbam about eating matzah b'teyavon. We found it in Tosfos and Brachos about reciting a bracha on your own. All seems to be consistent maybe with this Rambam's idea that hiddur is about how we do things. And we noted that someone pointed out that you don't really find the Rambam bringing the hiddur of a beautiful mitzvah item anywhere in Mishneh Torah. It's interesting, by the way, just a proof to that point, some point out that this Gemara that says you should have beautiful items, one of the things it mentions when writing Sefer Torah, should have a beautiful pen, kol musna. So some ask, well, how does that help? No one sees the pen that you use, and that doesn't become visible. So some suggest, it's like the Rambam, it's about how you do things. You do it with a nicer pen. Others say, no, you do see it because a nicer pen has nicer writing, so maybe it is about the impact. So there's a discussion about what to do with that part of the Gemara, which may be relevant to that whole story. And then we just noted that there's extensive discussions in Achronim in general about whether Hiddur Mitzvah becomes a detail of the fulfillment of the mitzvah, or whether it's just a general principle for how we do things, for ramifications in the areas of Esed Ochalosa, say, Osek and Mitzvah Patim and HaMitzvah, Tashlis, the like, all of those questions seem to correlate to that question. But it does seem to be the case, both logically and from the Gemara and Shabbos, that a Hiddur Mitzvah would not be Docha Shabbos. When it's with the Mitzvah itself, that's all part of the Tzura of the Mitzvah, but a Hiddur Mitzvah by itself would not be Docha Shabbos. Then we ask the question, so what about the Gemara Menachos? that seems to say you should be Mechal Shabbos by shechting an animal when you already have one, if it'll be more Mahodir, if the mitzvah will be beautified that way. So that seems to suggest that you would be Mechal Shabbos just for a Hindu mitzvah. And there are those who suggest a different interpretation of that Gemara, whatever it is, Shinim Mishlichus or other approaches. But what's very possible to say, as many do, is that no, this Gemara is not talking about Zekei Levi Aveihu. That's its own principle. It's saying that when it comes to Kadshim, there's a different rule. Karbanos have to be Mimivchar Nidrecha. Karbanos have to be from the best possible option. But that's not necessarily reflective of the principle of Zekei Levi Aveihu B'chol Torah Kula, which is more limited. So next up, Zekei Levi Aveihu and Chanukah, how does it relate? And to what extent is it connected to the notion of Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin, which is the next sugya on Daf Kafala from the base. Okay, so I think I have enough to say for...